Hi, I'm Dr. Safiya, the medical doctor with the Moses and Email Marketing Expert. In here, I take you behind the scenes of failed and successful email marketing campaigns. You get to see what these amazing individuals have tried that worked and didn't work in email marketing. If you've been curious and like me, you want to know what other people out there are really doing in email marketing, then join me as I go behind the scenes. Hello, listeners, welcome to Email Marketing Experiments. Today, we are going to be looking at out-of-the-box B2B email marketing strategies with a case study on a pest control brand. Now, before we go into today's session, we have a horse lover, somebody who has a very interesting to-do list style, which I'm going to ask her to share with you. She is a national marketing manager. And she has built her marketing career from the ground up through a degree apprenticeship. She has combined hands-on experience with big picture thinking. Over the past 5 years, she's worked across industries like music, luxury events, and even pest control, always finding creative ways to drive results and bring bold ideas to life. For Rihanna, marketing is about more than campaigns and KPIs. It's about curiosity, momentum, and not being afraid to hear the word no. She's passionate about showing young marketers that you don't need to wait for permission or follow the textbook route. Some of the biggest wins come from backing yourself and sharing your ideas and being willing to go first. And one thing that stood out to me when we had our pre-call was she kept saying, where there's a will, there's a way. And Rihanna, welcome to the call. I'm super excited to have you here.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited for this. That was a lovely introduction. So let's get started.
You're welcome. Now, you know, I saw your profile, you're into horseback riding, even before, you know, you mentioned it. And I'm curious, how did you learn?
Right. So it all started when I was about four. And it all began with a rocking horse that my grandparents bought me. And I absolutely adored this rocking horse. So my parents, they kindly took me on a pony day. You know, they're not horse related. I grew up with them loving rugby, both of them being rugby players. So I went to this pony day and I was given, I remember his name exactly. He was a horse called Felix and he was a dappled grey, which is a type of colour of a horse. And that was the exact colour of my rocking horse. So I literally remember like feeling like my dream and my imaginary pet had come to life. And then from there, my love of riding continued.
That's amazing. I can only imagine. Now, when you're not doing marketing and you're not horseback riding, what can we find you doing?
So it's going to sound a bit cheesy, but something that really helps me is the typical journaling, but I don't do it like I'm writing a diary. I literally make a habit of every day writing down one small win that's happened to me. So sometimes I might write it down the next day because let's face it, the whole day encompasses the whole day. But it could be something as simple as wearing an outfit, like, you know, today I'm wearing a top I haven't worn in ages and it's paired nicely, or even something as big as being on your podcast. You know, that's amazing. And for me, that's a great way to stay positive and reflect on the progress, you know, that you're making, even in your busiest days. And that can be both work and life related.
I love it. Now, there's something you told me about, which is your interesting to-do list, which has could-dos, should-dos. And I really want our listeners to get to hear because I haven't ever seen a to-do list in that. I mean, I've seen all the, I think it's Eisenhower matrix or thereabout that talks about the delegate, the automate. So I have seen, you know, all those methods. But then when you had it, should-dos, could-dos, I kept thinking about it. I'm like, okay, so give yourself permission to write like a long list of 1,001 things. So tell us about it.
So it's adapted from the Moscow matrix or Moscow hierarchy. I'm not actually sure what it was, but it's the original one is must do, should do's, could do's, and won't do's. Obviously, when I was working for Pestfix, and even now in my career at Caremark as their national marketing manager, you can't not do, you won't do. So you've got to do, you would like to do. You've got to stay positive as well. So my alongside that, I have my, this makes me sound crazy, but I have my daily tasks, my weekly tasks, my monthly or my quarterly tasks. So they're my things that happen every single month. And then when my must-dos, I'd say are like my sudden inbox tasks that, for instance, you know, where I now work at Caremark, if we have a franchise owner asking a question, I must respond to our franchise owner as quickly as possible. That's a must-do. But my would like to do's are maybe researching something new or updating an old image. Or for instance, I'd like to at the moment update some YouTube descriptions and thumbnails so that they're optimized for Gen SEO and everything like that. And then when I, you know, we'll probably be talking a lot about PestFix today. And with PestFix, I was the only marketer. So I had a lot of tasks. And it sounds ridiculous because you're basically giving yourself more tasks by breaking them down, but it literally simplified it. So when I say, if you've got so many tasks to do, or your brain is thinking of all these different things, just write it down in like a logical order so that you can then find yourself saying, right, I need to make sure I do my must-dos. But if there's some larger must-do tasks that maybe are lasting 2 weeks, you can't get like designing an advertisement or designing your email campaign, you know, you can't, if you're doing a flow email and you've got maybe you want your welcome email, then you follow up and you can't do that necessarily all in one day with your other tasks. So it just means you can then monitor your stages and your progress. At least it worked for me. It does sound a bit crazy. I do accept that.
Well, I find it pretty interesting, and it's something that I've made a mental note to try out and see how it works for me, because I think I've tried so many things and some days some work, some days, well, we just wing it. And other times it's like, you know what, I'm going to sleep. But yeah, we actually need to get, there are things that we need to get done. And when we think about it, it's like, you know, so I definitely want to try it out. Now, so today we're looking at out-of-the-box B2B email marketing strategies. And we're going to be looking at email marketing for, you know, like a pest control company. So what should our listeners expect from this episode?
So this episode, and you spoke about it at the beginning, is very much where there's a will, there's a way. Now, out of the box, because as the only marketing girlie for PestFix, which is the company we'll be speaking about, the pest control supplier. So as their only marketer, and it's not like we didn't have budget, but we didn't have huge budget. We didn't have an updated CRM system. You know, you have to think out of the box. Just because we don't have that doesn't mean we can't actually get emails working, converting, build those not necessarily automated steps, as you'll find out, but build those flows, because predominantly I was working in e-commerce and, you know, that email is a huge converter and I'm a huge believer in that. So today's episode with me, I want to tell you that actually just think outside that box, because you might be able to do what a competitor's doing or what someone with huge budget can do, but just in your own way.
Yeah, true. And that's the message we're going to be preaching today. Now, when we talked about your intro, we mentioned that you have done, you know, marketing across like so many different industries. And so I'd love to hear a bit about your journey into marketing, email marketing, you know, and how you even got here.
So my journey actually started quite young, I'd say, in the terms that my parents run a music distribution agency. So I was always surrounded by music artists, their creative work. You know, I'd find myself commenting on maybe their album artwork or like show merch and just really absorbing the creative side of things. But I suppose that then actually developed and I started getting more of an interest in it when I took GCSE business studies at school. And then, you know, I think initially I always thought I'd work with horses, perhaps maybe, you know, that equine chiropractor. And I did actually look at that for university. But as I learned more about business, you know, I'd noticed marketing everywhere. So I could go into Starbucks. Why'd they write my name on a cup? Why would the John Lewis adverts always be such a big hype at Christmas? You know, why do some brands always seem to just be on sale? And that curiosity is something that stuck with me. And I could actually apply what I was learning in the classroom to real life. So that pulled me in. And then from there, I did a degree apprenticeship working with my parents, which I was very fortunate to do. And because of that, I was able to organize off-the-job work experience, which meant I could organize work experience where, you know, in industries that weren't just music, where I wanted to learn. So I looked at Goodwood, which we did, you know, the Revival, the Festival of Speed, Goodworth. You've got H-Power, which are an international equestrian events company. So I was up in Windsor Castle for 2 weeks, and I worked on the Royal Windsor Horse Show, the London International Horse Show, and even the Queen's Platinum Jubilee Celebration. I also have worked part-time as a freelancer for a recruitment company, just doing a little bit of extra work. So, and you know, another one on my CV, gosh, here I'm listing out my CV here, but I worked for a local government-run theatre, so a music theatre, where they'd have stage shows, cinemas. They did a pantomime every Christmas. And I think, you know, so then I worked in pest control, of course, which is what we're going to be talking about mainly today. And now I've stepped into my role as National Marketing Manager for Caremark, which is a UK leading home care franchise. And I'm looking after their national marketing fund. And I think what my journey just shows is that the core focus here is your marketing skill set and your passion. Quite frankly, it's transferable across industries. And having that passion has definitely built my journey to where it is now.
And that's a very robust journey that you had there. I mean, the experience cuts about almost every and anything. I mean, from the Queen's Jubilee to the equestrian events. I find that pretty interesting because you've done marketing, will I say at scale, in just various diverse. I think the word is because the industries are so far apart. I mean, in one, you're doing like this event for this kind of thing, and the other one is like a whole total audience and group of people and segments, and it's like, you know, you just made it work. And I find that, you know, super interesting and amazing. So let's go into our out of the box, you know, marketing strategies. So tell us a bit about the brand. I know we've been mentioning Pest Fix, we've been saying Pest Control brand, but what are some highlights you think we should know about this brand, just for context for the audience?
Okay, so Pest Fix are a pest control supplier. And so if you need rat traps, rat poison, for trade customers, so your wasp nest destroyers, then solar panel bird proofing materials, you name it, they have it. Now, Pest Fix have two audiences, your B2B and your B2C. Your B2C are people like me and yourself who are homeowners, live in a home, and oh no, we see a rat, what do we do? Don't need to call in a pest controller just yet, let's get a rat trap or something, right?
Yeah.
And your B2B are your trade customers who are your professional pest controllers, and you know, they are coming to you every week buying their supplies to then carry out their jobs. So that's what Pest Fix focus on. Pest Fix also run a training academy in line with governing organizations. And like I said, for Pest Fix, I worked as the sole marketer. And because email is a massive, massive marketing tool, it is something I really wanted to implement into their strategy, which they hadn't necessarily done already. But not only that, email marketing isn't just a massive tool in marketing. It's a massive tool for e-commerce. Like I said earlier, for me, it's a massive driver. So that's why I really wanted to add it into Pest Fix's strategy.
Nice one. All right, so let's start with the abandoned cat. Tell us a bit about, you know, what it is you did and, you know, why you decided to take that, you know, creative approach.
So a lot of us as marketers and email flows will have heard of that typical abandoned cart follow-up email strategy. One of my favorite brands that, you know, always does it and probably always makes me then go back and buy it is ASOS. You know, they're on it. So I wanted to introduce this to Pest Fix. I really believed that this would drive our conversions. We have a lot of customers just coming onto the website, especially our trade customers coming and checking out our latest deals. So I wanted to add that. And I knew that this worked because of broader trends and also, you know, my own experience. So that's the idea behind adding the abandoned cart to the strategy.
Ah, I like the fact that you also experienced it, so you knew that it worked, and so you were willing to try it out for this brand. And just to point out there, sometimes we experience things in other industries, and then we bring them into our own space to try it out, and you just be surprised by the results and the impact that you actually get. So how does this abandoned cart follow-up strategy work?
Okay, like I said, we didn't have a major system. We had a really old, outdated list of emails that was then coming up new with all new purchases, but we didn't have any segmentation in that. You know, this abandoned cart strategy, we didn't have a mailing software. But so we had done like MailChimp and Brevo campaigns and things like that, but we didn't have one that we actually paid for that could automate and connect to our website. Okay, so think outside the box here. What do we do? So with the basic customer list, I found a way to do it. And it's going to sound, to anyone listening, it's going to sound crazy, but it worked. And I promise you, it worked. I found that if I created a plain text, personalized email, that especially with our B2B audience, I bolded keywords, I added simple links instead of doing like this fancy HTML design. I actually made these as templates in Gmail because you could save them in Gmail. And then with these templates, I manually checked the daily basket logs and then checked who had ordered. Those that had not ordered, I then sent them one by one an email saying, this is, so I put it into the template and it would be something like, we noticed you were looking at blah, blah, blah. And then I give a bit of maybe some trust or some authority. I'd maybe put in, if relevant, some images. I'd maybe put in a link, you know, all stuff like that. And it worked. Me sending that follow-up email, it helped my numbers because especially if we had these products such as Daddy Long Legs, which are like a bird deterrent. Never thought I'd be genned up in my career on bird deterrents and everything like that, but I am. So the Daddy Long Legs is a rotating bird spider deterrent that, you know, can go on roofs. And basically I sold, I think he ordered about, he definitely ordered more than one. Like it was like three or four of them or something like that, which they're quite a, you know, they're a larger ticket pest control item. And he'd had that in his basket. I sent the email, interestingly, I sent the email in the morning at 7 and he went in and ordered at 12. So that was my first one. And I was like, oh yes, this worked. Wasn't all for nothing. And then I did it more and more and more people were doing it. I think it sounds silly because it sounds like such a small number, but I had 19 people. It worked for 19 people, which you're like, really? Only 19 of your customers? But when you're at the stage of an unorganized list, no CRM, thinking outside that box, everything is a win. And so, you know, I then thought, okay, let's maybe focus this a bit more on our B2C customers. And again, it started working. So that was my abandoned cart strategy. It was all very manual. It was pulling out data, creating a template, and then literally to monitor it, I would just watch the basket log because I'd always review the basket logs and see, you know, I'm obsessed by numbers and I wanted to know what money we were making. And I'd be like, I remember email because I had done it. I remember emailing that person. Let's see what they bought. Oh, they bought what I told them to buy. So it worked.
That's so good. So did you ever think of, or did you eventually like try to automate it, to scale it so that you could do it like on a larger scale?
So I actually found Klaviyo did have a free one which you could implement a slight automation to, and I started experimenting with those tools like Brevo and playing around further from that manual Gmail template to the more structured HTML campaigns. And I then, by the time I got, this was kind of a later strategy into my career with PestFix, and so by the time I actually left to start my new role at Caremark, that's where I got it to. And I left actually saying to the commercial director that I really believe that automation would scale these results even further. And, you know, if we did pay for a software, if it worked by just me manually doing it for 19 people, and actually they were quite high price ticket items, what could it do for even just our rat traps? That, you know, you can't just think, forget about the small items, because those small items, they'll cut the price. So whilst I didn't get to automate it because I moved on, I did recommend automating it and scaling it, because adding that into our budget for marketing, I think it would have been transformative.
That's good. And, you know, there are two particular things I want to look into, because a lot of people do abandon carts. They have it automated and, you know, all of those things, and we see it work. But you had like really great results from it. And you mentioned some particular things. So the first thing was, you mentioned highlighting keywords, using it for some high ticket offers. But the keywords was what really stood out to me. So it's already an abandoned cart, which means that it's quite personalized, because you know that this person is already interested in this, right? So were there any other things you did to, you know, maybe persuade and, you know, just drive for the sale? I'm just curious as to what the email looked like or sounded like in terms of like angle and direction. Then the second part of it would be, I know you sent that one email, but let's say the person did not buy, were you sending like maybe another follow-up?
Maybe. So the first answer, basically, it would be your typical, hi, whoever, notice you were looking at air spikes, have you got a bird proofing job coming up? Then it was a line basically saying the benefit of that bird spike. Now, bird spikes to Pestfix customers, especially the B2B, were an astonishing price. So it would be, with your trade saving, you're saving X, right? So it would be a, oh, wow, this is really is a great price then, because I'm saving that. So that would then go into their mind. And then it would be the benefits of ordering with Pestfix. So it would be, I can't remember how I worded it, but I remember then having three bullet points, just three, no more than like three, 4 words long. And it was like, let's just call it this, but this was not the wording. By ordering from Pestfix, you know, you get next day delivery, high quality something, and then the trade saving. It was something like that, but it was speaking of the benefit of the price predominantly, because we're talking to B2B mainly, we're talking to men, we're talking to trade professionals, they're running a business, money is the main driver, and obviously the speed of the product. So that's what I would focus on.
And, you know, there was something that you actually did that you didn't mention. So you also went in to tell them what's in it for them. So I know that you're calling it benefits, but it's more like, this is what's in it for you, because now you're not saying get 10% off or something, you're saying you save, right? And then that angle, they begin to think about it. Well, I mean, if I'm able to save more on my operations, then it gives them like, you know, a wider profit margin, that kind of thing. So I really like that. And then you also did segmentation there, because you had the B2B, you had the B2C, but you were focusing on, you know, these particular people with this angle. And I think that that's something we can put in even with our regular, you know, automated emails, where we're having these plain text, the keywords being, you know, boldened, and then going in to really point out what's in it for them. Because, I mean, that's all people, that's like the major thing that people care about. And this is quite interesting. So now you mentioned plain text emails, and I know that you did another one where you tried out between plain text and HTML, and you made some interesting discoveries. So before you go into, you know, this particular story, could you just tell our listeners, for those who are not quite familiar with like the techie side of things, when you say HTML and plain text in regard to like emails, what do you mean?
So the way I interpret HTML versus plain text for me are your simple words. So hi, there, comma, blah, 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 sentence, blah, 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 sentence, and then your name, all the best, Rihanna. So it's just your normal standard email that you'd write in Gmail or Outlook or whatever mail provider. Then the HTML are my funky designed ones that have my buttons and my dividers and my images and my columns. Like I say, the brand, so brands like ASOS will give you. And that's how I interpret it. Correct me if I'm wrong, because I could be wrong. But
Well, I think that's like basically it. One is totally plain, no graphics, no images, nothing. And then I think a lot of us do HTML without even knowing that we are doing HTML. But yeah, okay. So let's go into, what it is that you tried out.
Okay, so as I mentioned, plain text was what worked for PestFix. And the only way I found that out is by testing both. Now, to do HTML emails, you do need a mailing platform. You can kind of do them with Gmail, but I think a mailing platform is so much easier. And you can code them, which I have done before, but now the mailing platforms are so easy. Mailchimp, Brevo, Klaviyo, you MailerLite, there's so many that you literally just drag and drop your button, your image. And so for the major campaigns, like we did a Valentine's deals, I did some spring cleaning deals. And because they weren't personalized, because they weren't, anything to do with a specific customer, I just sent them out to our whole mailing list. And if I'm not looking at conversion rates or anything like that, because again, we don't know, and bounce rates, because the list was old, it wasn't updated. And I then actually used the results of those HTML campaigns to update the list. But besides that, I noticed in terms of actual open rates and then the reading time, that the HTML image heavy emails, they weren't, they weren't converting. They weren't. People would like them, and they'd, if I got the right subject line and preview text, which is something I really like trying to figure out the psychology, what's going to make you open that email? So I get that, but no one would click on that link and buy things. But as soon as I started emailing, like just to the person as a plain text and saying that same message, but no crazy graphics, the simple, what's going on? What's the benefit to you? And where do I find it? Well, click that link. It worked. Now, if we think about that, our audience, we're going to stick with the B2B, the trade audience, because otherwise there's too many things to talk about. But if we think about our B2B audience, well, they're business owners, pest controllers, they're out in the field, they're reading their phone in between their van, in their van in between visits. They need it quick, they need it easily digestible. Whilst nice graphics might make them laugh and smile and fun, no, they need it clear, plain, and simple. So, and again, they're men, mainly aged 35 to 55. They want direct. So basically, I found that that was the way.
I like that you said that they want it direct. And this really shows another aspect of email marketing, like the foundation of it, where we tell people like you need to know your audience, you need to know who you're sending to and understand these people in terms of behavior. Because I mean, what if you didn't know that they like to just have things being told them directly instead of trying to be fancy and clever, or maybe bringing in things that they feel are just wasting their time, that kind of thing. You'll be sending out emails and then you'll be wondering maybe why it's not working and all of those things. And exactly what you did is how people can even find out. You have this idea, you test it out, you see the one that works, you run with it. And it's really interesting because I mean, some people don't like, I mean, if you're trying to send an email, it's not on brand, it doesn't have your brand colors and all of those things, it feels like it's quite difficult, sometimes to send it. And then these people are not even moved by all those branding and yada yada that we put into. They just want like a normal email straight to the point, and that's it. And I find it pretty interesting. And I must recommend that, anybody listening to this, go ahead and test it out with your email software. And just see, maybe you might uncover something new or something different. I really love the fact that you tried out like so many different things. It also shows, how much you were interested in the growth of this company, because you won't be testing out and trying all these things if you weren't looking for results. And I find it interesting. Like I said, I have some things that I definitely also want to try out in my list and just see like what people are responding to. Now, another of the things you tried out, right, was like email send times. And I know that for this particular one, like I have a bit of bias. For every time someone has said, oh, what's the best time to send an email? I'm like, there's no best time to send an email. you can train your audience to learn to receive your email at a particular time. But you did an experiment and you found out, you know, something different. So tell us about it.
I very much agree that you can train your audience. And I think if we had started to implement these strategies for a longer term, you know, if I hadn't have left, then we definitely could have trained our audience based on what I'm about to tell you guys. So we're thinking about B2B, we're thinking about pest controllers, we're thinking about our audience. As I said, they're working in from to and from their van to their job. They're tradesmen at the end of the day, and they start work early. They finish work maybe early or late, depending on how long their job is. Well, if they're starting work early, they're going to be looking on their phone early. That's when their brain is going to be the most active. That's when they're about to start their job and they know what they've got for the day. You know, another thing that I did being tradesman, I observed my other half. He works in gas and heating. He's a gas and heating engineer, also known as a plumber. And he doesn't want to be checking his emails in the evening. He will spend, do you know what he does? Every month, he will go through his emails and do like batch deletes. But if you email him in the morning before work, well, he's checking his day. So he's going to do a quick, you know, check through. And so I wanted to catch professionals before their day got busy. Now that completely contrasts to B2C, because like I say, we're talking B2B today. So I found that I'd do a test. I'd do one at maybe 7:30 in the morning, one at maybe 4:00, and one at the typical time when people recommend the 7 p.m. I don't know about you, but I always get emails around that 7 p.m. time. And, well, the 7:30 a.m. one, it worked. And what I noted, like I said, with the Daddy Long Legs one earlier, they would look on it at 7, so that's when you grab their attention, but, oh, they've got a job. They're in their car. They can't buy it immediately, but you've got their attention. So they then purchase in their lunch break around that 12 o'clock mark. And that's the pattern I kind of identified. But with what you said about send times, I definitely think that you can train them. There's a brand called Harry Hall, which is an equestrian brand. Now, I'm a member of Harry Hall, and we'll also talk about co-op. I'm also a co-op member. I get an email from Harry Hall pretty much, and I know that I'm going to receive it pretty much around that 7 a.m. time every morning, because when I go onto my phone, I know that if I refresh, Harry Hall is going to be top of page. On a Monday morning, co-op members get their weekly deals sent to them via email, and I always know I can choose my weekly deals on that Monday. So I know to look out for those two emails, and that's from training your audience.
And then in training your audience, you now create a culture, because I mean, now you're looking out for it because you know your weekly deals are going to be there and you've built like a habit around it. So it's sticky. So people just, you know, are used to it. And that's a lot of marketing psychology in there. That's a lot to unpack. But yeah, I feel like there are so many things that people can do off these experiments that you've tried, in terms of things they can try with their list to be able to increase engagement, to be able to increase that sense of community, right? Because people want they don't just want like subscribers alone, but they want that community. So you don't send an email and people are replying to say, oh, I haven't received an email and all of those. I mean, that's more like B2C anyways, but on the B2B side, of course, there are also like signals and all of that. I feel like there are so many things that people can take away from this. Now, let's move forward. I think I'll circle back a bit later, but let's move forward. Now, we have list management, data cleaning, and, you know, trying to make your list all squeaky and, you know, all the good stuff. So what made you realize that cleaning your data and segmenting your list was worth the effort, especially because it was a really old list? So I'm thinking that the size was, you know, quite large.
Yes, it was. And one big thing is when you're dealing with all these free trials on mailing platforms, you're limited. Or for instance, we were Brevo pay-as-you-go. Well, you're paying as you go. If I'm wanting to send an email to 2,000 people and I've got 2,000 credits, I need to make sure that's going to go to 2,000 people that are pretty much going to open it Otherwise, I'm wasting money. So I knew that list management was key. But how do we do it? How do we do it without a CRM? How do we do it with lots of duplicate or outdated emails? And I wouldn't say it was a limited budget. It's just there wasn't, if I spoke to, you know, the commercial director and managing director, that wasn't where they wanted to focus the budget, which is fine. So basically, I decided to manually export the data of the emails, the customers that I would be sending it to. So let's just say we're doing a large campaign here. We're not talking my abandoned cart strategy. We're talking my large Valentine's campaign where maybe I did do the HTML emails. I'd speak to our tech team and I would say, right, can I have a list of emails of all the customers that have bought Bird Spikes in the last 3 months? Or it could be, can I have a list of customers that have spent over £150 on Pest Fixes products online in the last month or 2 months, depending on what the subject was and the, you know, what I was promoting. I'd then take that list. I'd put it into a spreadsheet. I'd use the custom formula to remove duplicates. I'd remove duplicates and then I would use a custom formula which I would link up to my list of unsubscribed and bounced emails. And I would remove all of those from that email list. So that basically from 2000, I had 400. It sounds like a lot of time. Once you have the process and the formulas, it just becomes second nature. But I remember explaining it in my handover and I was thinking, there's no easy way to explain this. And I'm a big believer in idiot guides. And it sounds ridiculous me calling them idiot guides, but if you literally write down your simple steps and you follow your simple step every time, it becomes like second nature. And that's what this eventually did. So that is how I cleaned our data list and I kept it maintained. For it again, out of the box. And I think when we're talking about advice and takeaways on what we're talking about today, right? So if I go on my earlier takeaway, that personalization, that experimentation in both B2B and B2C markets, when you're in a small company or team with limited tools, you've got to think out of the box. And where there is that will, there is that way. And I think what I want to sort of say is test, and like we said earlier, test and understand your audience preferences. Rather than, you can know what's working in the industry, but that might not work for yours. So maybe take that tip and trial it and then adapt it to your audience. But I knew data cleaning was massive, right? How am I going to do it? Well, let's think outside the box. What do I know as a system that can work? Well, I know Excel, Google Sheets has the remove duplicates function. I know it has filters that I can filter out from different things. I know I can take a list and compare it against another list. Okay, so that worked. And that's what I did. So it saved money, it saved time, and it allowed me to send more personal relevant emails.
Yeah, and I think another thing that stood out to me was the fact that, you know how you mentioned at the beginning that skills are transferable, right? So you brought in this other skill set and used it to be able to get what it is that you wanted. And, you know, you just did it, yes, manual, but, you know, very efficient, be able to achieve what it is that you wanted at that point in time. And I think that's like the underlying message of today's episode, the fact that where there's a will, there's a way. You want to achieve something. Sometimes it's like pretty hard. It's like every other thing is working against you. But sometimes you really just need to leave the usual how it's done and think, okay, what else can I do to still be able to achieve this outcome? And then you open your mind to like lots of strategies and ideas and all of that. Now, there's some things I really, really want you to take away from this session before we go into some confessions, because we haven't taken Rihanna's confession yet, right? And we do have that segment of the podcast, right? So for the abandoned cart follow-up, I want you all to actually, if you're a course creator, let's say you're not e-commerce, but you sell a program and you have your system connected to like your tool that you use to check out, right? So maybe like your trend cards or maybe your seller, depending on where it is you are. What you want to do is, and some of these e-commerce tools actually allow you set up like the abandoned cart within them if they can't connect to your email marketing system. I want you to actually set up an abandoned cart email. Let's say you can't think of how to write up to three. Write one. Do exactly what Rihanna did. Highlight the keywords. Make them bold. Put in the benefits. Keep it simple, straight to the point. And then come back to share with us what your results were like when you tried it. Now, of course, I also want you to contrast sending out the plain text versus HTML. So you send out, let's say, the same email to this group A, make it plain, to group B, make it HTML, and see what your audience likes. Basically, a part of email marketing is actually taking time to understand your own audience. There are all the general email marketing rules, but what about the rules for your own audience, right? Have you figured that out? And the final thing I want you to test out is the send time. Yes, I know I said what I said about the send times and all, but look at it the way Rihanna looked at it. I mean, knowing these people, so I remember telling somebody that in the morning you'll find me rushing to work. And so if you're sending me something to do for you at that point in time where I'm in transit, rushing to work, you're not going to get feedback. But let's say you leave that rush hour by like an extra 15 minutes. Maybe I've settled into what it is I'm doing or where it is I'm going. I can actually like, okay, let me see what's going on. Let me quickly check it before I get to like my next destination, that kind of thing. So taking time to actually understand the people on your list is really key, and then to give you ideas for send times. And now it is time for open rate confession. So you're going to tell us about that email marketing mistake that made you cringe or made you scream internally, that got you thinking, how on earth did this happen? And then of course you'll tell us what lesson it taught you.
Okay, right. If I think of something that makes me cringe, because I'm testing a lot of strategies, I'm doing it manually, there's bound to be a human error. Well, my template, I would leave it as a template that I'd written. So let's just say my customer's called Chris. Hi, Chris. We noticed you were checking out Bird Spikes. Well, I forgot to change the name of the customer. So I sent to Paul, hi, Chris. We noticed you were checking out Rodenticide. Well, I got the product right. But the name, no. And I just think, and it makes me cringe, but then at the end of the day, it doesn't matter because it's one email. That customer's not going to absolutely sack you for it because it's a name. And because I'm sending it in plain text and I'm sending it from my own personal email address within the company, perhaps that makes it look more personal in the sense, oh, well, she's messed up slightly here. Maybe I'll email her and let her know. So actually, I think they did actually email me back. And I said, oh, I'm so sorry. Please accept my apology. We then had a communication going. He then asked for an updated guide on a product. So that mistake, while I cringe at it, I'm not saying to do it as a strategy. I'm not saying that at all. But there's a cloud, there's a silver lining. Or every cloud has a silver lining, whatever the saying is. But that's something that makes me cringe because I'm just like, really, Rihanna? You could have changed the name.
Well, but we can't cry over spilled milk anyways. But that's pretty interesting. I mean, I'm sure the customer is looking at it like, and then you just go, I'm sure this is not for me. All right. So beyond abandoned cart emails, what automations, right, would you say B2B marketers should definitely lean into when it comes to email marketing side of things?
So one automation, and I slightly touched on it earlier, with B2B customers. So let's take PestFix as our example. With B2B customers at PestFix, they get some incredible trade deals. Well, I've just set up a trade account. What do I want? A welcome email telling me what are my top five deals that I could save as a professional pest controller? Now that welcome email, right, won't just possibly link to conversions. It will get them, like you say, starting to get familiar with when emails will be sent, how emails will be sent. And also, a lot of our customers will have phoned up and spoken to our sales team. They will have then become a trade customer. So that welcome email is another touch point of communication, which then creates that integrated marketing or multi-channel marketing, whatever the word is. But so for me, the welcome email automation for your customers is key, especially in B2B. But again, focusing on what's in it for them all the time.
Yeah. And I like how you're talking about integrated marketing because, I mean, you do end-to-end marketing. You take it all the way from the top to the bottom. Sometimes people see email marketing in silos. So it's email marketing on this side. It's content marketing on this side. It's media buying on this side. But when you bring it all together, that's the marketing. Whether you call it omni-channel, integrated, whatever it is, you're making everything, work with the other. And I think that's something that I find really interesting. So you mentioned earlier about psychology and what's going to make you open, that when you want to send this email, you're thinking, what's going to make you open this? So what are 5 things, or maybe 3 things, you have noticed that make people open emails?
Right. Love it when it's like you've missed out. So for instance, I sent for Caremark, we do a discovery day for franchise owners. And it was a discovery day email notification for them to sign up to a free online call to learn more about the Caremark franchise. From that small list I sent it out to, and I can't remember how many people were on it, 17 booked onto our discovery day call. There's now 19 booked onto it, and it's out of 25. That was one email. They all sent it again. I stuck with my B2B strategy of my early morning before work, that 7:30 time. It worked. But I basically titled that subject line with "You're invited," and then Caremark's discovery day is live. So I targeted it personally. I said "You're" with B2B with Pestfix. When I wanted to ask someone, for instance, I wanted to ask a customer if I could use their photos for a case study, I put "your photos" on LinkedIn. They would open and reply and would give me their photos and their case study, personalizing it with "your." Another strategy are numbers. So money or percentage or, again, like things that could shock them. That's numbers are a massive thing. I don't know about you. I never felt emojis, especially with a B2B audience, worked because they would look more marketing and spammy. The emails that would look like they weren't marketing, that would look like they were maybe a follow-up call or actually a business email because perhaps not that something, but something need to be actioned, worked better for the B2B audience. So I think without knowing the word to describe it, not making them sound marketing, not making them sound promotional, actually just making it sound like I'm emailing you, a typical subject line of what the email was about. So there are 3 things for me that would definitely help with like the open rates.
And yes, I've definitely seen those numbers at play, even for myself personally. Oh, this is how I did a so-and-so increase, or this thing cost me XYZ in, those kind of things. But numbers, I don't know, it just has a way of making you curious enough to see. And then I think it also has a way of like pulling the crowd where it's like, okay, so-and-so number of people have done this. You now feel like the odd one out, so to say. I think I received an email from Homozy. He started promoting his new book. And he said, I think about 32,000 or 132,000, I can't remember which of it, of people had signed up. And I'm like, what? Like, it just made me go like, wow. But then I wasn't bothered because I'd already signed up. But if those number of people had signed up and I hadn't signed up, I'd be like, what am I still waiting for? That kind of thing. So yeah, I think numbers just work some magic. Now, what's your response when people say email marketing is dead?
Like I just said, I sent an email out today and we got 17 out of the 19 already booked on this discovery day call from one email, all literally all booked between 7 and 10 a.m. from one email.
Nice, nice. I think that that's enough to give the person food for thought. So when it comes to email marketing myths, we have like a lot of things that people believe, a lot of things that are out there. What are 1 to 3 email marketing myths that you want to bust on this call?
Right. A myth that I want to bust, right? That I'm, like I said, I'm a numbers girly, but depending on your industry, those click-through rates when you send out your emails might not necessarily mean that they're not going to purchase or they're not going to convert, that your email didn't work. Because I sent out an email for a marketing campaign. It was Valentine's discounts. Well, the guy phoned up from the email. I couldn't track that. So how do I know that that email then converted? Well, I do because I listened to my trade team. But I wouldn't have known. So don't get hooked up, hung up on the numbers. That's myth one. Myth two. Right. I think that in terms of, you know, people saying that you need budget. Well, no, because look what I was managing to do without any, there was no money spent on that email other than the Brevo pay-as-you-go ones. But I was achieving. And I think myth three is that, I don't know about you, but with links in emails, I've seen that if you add links to emails, that there's like some myths that they might not get opened or they might get moved into junk. But I never had that. I never found that my emails, if I, especially my plain text B2B emails, I'd have several links in there, but they were coming from my personal business email address, going to another. They were written personally and they had multiple links in and they didn't go into spam. So I think that could be a myth in terms of, yes, links might be an indicator for spam, but don't not include them, because I don't know how to maybe phrase this myth, but it just wasn't something that was affecting my emails. So it was a myth for me. Might not be a myth for everyone else. So don't take heed of everything I say. It's not.
I think that we links, part of it might be what the link. So you know how sometimes you copy a link and it copies plus like the UTM and the referral. So for example, if you want to share LinkedIn and you copy the share button, it actually shares it with like a UTM code attached. So it makes it longer. But if you take away that UTM, and you know that the email is also going to add its own UTM, so its own tracking code to like that particular one. But if you take it away, then it becomes shorter. Because I remember doing like some deliverability test and it was like two long links. And I'm like, how is that? How is that your problem? But, you know, it just was something that I just took in passing because I didn't really dwell on it, right? But I think with links, what I'm seeing is that some audiences might respond more to buttons while others may respond more to text. And then the funny thing that somebody tried it out, the color of the button. And then I think, was it red or something? It wasn't in her brand color, but she noticed that red buttons seemed to do well for her. And it was such an interesting thing to know, because I'm like, how on earth will I get to the color of the... And I know that psychologically, some colors tend to evoke some certain responses, but she just noticed that red just seemed to make it stand out for her and make people just go ahead. So you can imagine, like, there's so many things out there that we can test for our audience and all of that. But this has been a really interesting conversation.
Oh, I've loved it. And that's really interesting what she found, because color theory, again, it's about testing for your audience, because you don't know, your audience will have some commonalities. There will also be some very, very big differences between your audiences in like your own audience. But there will be some trends, and it's finding which trend is going to give you the biggest outcome. Oh, it's been so much fun.
Yes, it is. So if you could leave our listeners, I think you've already given us so many pieces of advice, but if you could leave them with just one final piece of advice about experimenting with email marketing, what would it be?
have fun and don't get caught up on the results. At the end of the day, marketing is about testing, and you can't do that if you're going to get annoyed if something doesn't work.
Love it. Now, do you have any interesting things you're working on or that are coming up that you'd like to tell our audience about?
Not necessarily, but I've started my new role and we're at Caremark, and I'm really loving what I'm getting into. I work with Girls in Marketing and I'm their ambassador for junior marketers. And each sort of every few months, we run a junior networking session for the members, junior marketers networking session for the members, of which one is coming up at the end of the month. So anybody listening to this that's maybe thought about becoming a Girls in Marketing member, that is a Girls in Marketing member, just come along and join the session or pop me a message on LinkedIn if you want to find out more. I'm simply just Rhianna Clavering on LinkedIn. I'm not the biggest poster on there, but I'll post some key milestones. I'll share some things that I've put onto Caremark's franchise LinkedIn page and some things that I've been working on. Like, I'll obviously share that I've been with you guys today on the podcast. So, yeah.
And that's amazing. So that's actually how I found Rhianna in the Girls in Marketing Slack community, and that was where we connected. And she does host amazing sessions, and they do have a lot, and I mean a lot, because I was like, oh, I want to start doing PR for my business, and I went to webinar session and I took PR and I'm like, okay. I mean, I knew I didn't know much about PR, but there seems to be a lot of things here that can just take me 0 to 100, so I have more clarity in what it is I wanted to do. And it's like that for like different aspects of marketing. I think that's one of the things I love about Girls in Marketing. Aside the fact that you can actually like connect with people, get to learn from other people, it's quite a supportive community. So I definitely recommend. I'm locked in on the annual plan. So yeah.
Me too.
I'm with you all for the year. And yes, I'll be attaching her LinkedIn link to the show notes so that you can connect with her, drop her a hi, and you know she will definitely respond to you. It has been such a joy to have you here and have this conversation. Thank you for taking us behind the scenes of what it is you did. I mean, people will be like, does email marketing work for my business? And right here, I mean, it's working for pest control and rat traps and poisons and stuff. So yeah, that's your cue to try out email marketing in your business. Till next time, this is Email Marketing Experiments, where we think it, test it, and share it with you. Thank you all for listening in, and thank you, Rhianna, for coming to join us on the show.
Thank you for having me. I've absolutely loved it.